report today at firstamendmentradio.com.
Welcome to another edition of American Exposé. That was not the music that I intended to start with, but that's the way it goes sometimes with live radio. You make little blunders here and there, and that's the way it goes. I guess it's as good as anything, I suppose. August 15, 2005 edition of the broadcast. Thanks for joining us tonight. And tonight we're going to get into some water information as we covered some stuff on last week's broadcast. And I'm experimenting here with some different equipment tonight. So if you cannot hear me or you cannot understand, if I sound in the mud at all, give me a call, 559-781-3773. 559-781-3773. I'm trying to see if this extra box that I've hooked up here that I have on loan is worth the price, and if so, then I might end up buying one. Later on down the road. So if someone can give me some feedback about what the sound quality is like today, is it better, is it worse, let me know. 559-781-3773. Or you can email me at darren@darrenweeks.net. Again, darren@darrenweeks.net. Or my email address is on the front page of stopagenda21.com. Again, that's stopagenda21.com, as there's a lot of information also there for research purposes. Dennis does regular research on a regular basis and posts his information there on the front page of AmericanExpose.com, and we appreciate that extra information. A lot of things going on here, ladies and gentlemen. I have an email here from Wanda, and it's headlined, Western Watersheds Project Wins a Major Victory, a major federal court victory ordering the immediate removal of cattle from over 80,000 acres of public lands in the Jarbidge Field Office of the Bureau of Land Management. And see, people always talk about, people who are proponents of federal land management, that we need to protect the land. We have to protect the land from abuses for future generations. And this is a classic example of how well future generations are going to be able to use the land. It says, this remarkable court victory for the Western Watersheds Project affects 28 Bureau of Land Management grazing allotments located southwest of Twin Falls, Idaho, to the Nevada border in the Jarbidge Field Office of the BLM. The majority of the cattle to be removed belong to the largest public land rancher in the United States, 96-year-old billionaire J.R. Simplot. And the point doesn't really matter whether he's a billionaire or not. The point is that this is supposed to be land that's supposed to be controlled by the public, and the public's not allowed to use it. The order by Chief Judge B. Lynn Windmill finds that in issuing new 10-year permits for livestock grazing over 800,000 acres of public lands, that the BLM violated both the National Environmental Policy Act and the Federal Land Policy and Management Act. Judge Windmill concluded that the BLM must carry our full environmental impact statement on the entire landscape of the 28 allotments, and that the irreparable harm that would occur to sage grouse, a BLM sensitive species, if grazing continued warranted an immediate injunction ending all livestock use on all allotments. So the WWP, that is the Western Watersheds Project, will have the court order posted on the WWP website at westernwatersheds.org shortly, if they don't already have it up. Interested readers can access the decision and order immediately at the Advocates for the West website at www.advocateswest.org. Advocateswest.org. Now, this is just another blow to landowners. But keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that the plan is to take all land off limits to you and I. As it was laid out in the Phillip County News, Malta, Montana, on January 4th, 1934, in a headline piece, Tugwell predicts new regulations for land with federal control. Some of you have heard us share this before. For those who haven't, I will share it again because it's rather short. It says, use of all land, public and private, will be controlled by the federal government in the future. Assistant Secretary of Agriculture Rexford Tugwell predicted this week. Land which cannot be operated effectively under private ownership, and folks, they don't think any land can be effectively operated under private ownership. Land which cannot be operated effectively under private ownership will be held by the government as public forests, parks, game preserves, grazing ranges, recreation centers, and the like, Tugwell asserted. Keep in mind, the Supreme Court decision of June 26th, I believe it was, of this year, facilitated the taking of private land for the purpose of developers so that it can be used now for public forests, parks, game preserves, grazing ranges, recreation centers, and the like. Privately owned land will be controlled, quote, to whatever extent is found necessary for maintaining continuous productivity, unquote. In other words, if private landowners are not able to be productive, they'll have their land taken away from them. Where your house sits is not very productive for the public, and that's part of the communitarian agenda, ladies and gentlemen. Communitarianism is all about removing individual rights in favor of rights of the collective. The individual is supplanted in favor of the collective. That's communitarianism. That is what's being put into place all across America right now. That is why if your city is not currently under revitalization, it will be. They continue, they say, state officials in Montana were studying Tugwell's statement to see how it might affect that state. Quote, we have depended too long on the hope that private ownership and control would operate somehow for the benefits of society as a whole. See, that's what I just got done saying. This article was from 1934. Ladies and gentlemen, this plan has been at work for many, many years. And the 20th century has been instrumental in implementing the plan. Now it has sped up in the 21st century with the advent of Agenda 21 and at the end of the 20th century. It says, we have depended too long, and this is a quote, on the hope that private ownership and control would operate somehow for the benefit of society as a whole. That hope has not been realized, unquote. That statement from Tugwell. And he said that present acreage reduction plans were only an emergency stopgap. He continued by saying, what is done is merely to keep a part of each field of each farm out of use. It seems to be obvious that this cannot be a characteristic feature of a permanent policy. Now, the article's author continues by saying, as an alternative, Tugwell advocated, now listen to this, Tugwell advocated controlling the total volume of farm products by limiting the area available for production, the government acquiring and devoting to other uses all land in excess of that needed for production. I want to read that again. It says, as an alternative, Tugwell advocated controlling the total volume of farm products by limiting the area available for production, the government acquiring and devoting to other uses all land in excess of that needed for production. What do we have going on today with the Bureau of Land Management swallowing more and more land? As I started the broadcast, with the Western Watersheds Project wins a major federal court victory ordering the immediate removal of cattle from over 800,000 acres of public land. And again, that's public land. But there's more and more public land being created, being swallowed by the BLM, by groups like the Nature Conservancy, who swallow the land, who buy up the land, and then sell it to the federal government to put conservation easements, in, which are restrictions on the land, so private individuals can't do with it what they choose. This is the agenda for the 21st century. And this comes straight from the UN. Meanwhile, I covered water to a large degree on Friday's broadcast. Liz Bowen writes in the Pioneer Press, Dateline Fort Jones, California. State going after Scott River water, hardcore. It says increased regulations with costly permits, fees, and possible fines will affect landowners along Scott River. Currently, the state is creating an action plan that will fix impairments in the water quality of the Scott River. Landowners will be expected to do the fixes with or without government funding. Additionally, the California State North Coast Regional Water Council Board has its eye focused on proposing a groundwater study of the Scott River, which could drastically affect the pumping of agricultural water for farmers and ranchers. What is likely to follow? The shutdown of agriculture, complete the demise of the timber industry, and affect all landowners in the Scott Valley by establishing a grading regulation. The state action plan will address warm water temperatures and sediment in Scott River. So far, the draft document is over an inch thick. It will go out for comments from the public soon. Local residents claim that the state agency is using incorrect data in several instances, which is creating unreachable goals. Fixes must be practical to work, they say. Are the goals realistic? Are the goals attainable? Those were the questions asked over and over again during a meeting last week with staff employees of the State Regional Water Quality Control Board. Again, the State Regional Water Quality Control Board. Scott River is in the hot seat in more ways than one, and local landowners are concerned the State Regional Water Quality staff does not have fully understand the complex dynamics of the Scott River. Nearly 3 weeks ago, staff from the Regional Water Quality Control Board encouraged landowners in the Scott Valley to participate in the technical advisory group called the TAG in discussing the possible fixes to impairments, quote-unquote, in the Scott River. Six meetings and workshops were held during the last 2.5 years, with rancher John Menke being the most consistent member to attend the meetings. Menke is a retired professor from the University of California, Berkeley, and Davis. He was instrumental in establishing models for improvements in the environment and specialized in utilizing cattle grazing to improve wildlife habitat, the term TMDL used to explain the development and actions of the plan. And on and on and on it goes. It says permitting and enforcing of water quality has been established through the California Porter Cologne Water Quality Control Act. Again, permitting and enforcement of water quality has been established through the California Porter Cologne Water Quality Control Act. This Porter Cologne Act established the State Water Resources Control Board and each regional water quality control board as the principal state agencies for having primary responsibility in coordinating and controlling water quality in California. Above the state is the Federal Clean Water Act, which created the Environmental Protection Agency. It is that agency that ultimately listed the Klamath River and its tributaries, like the Salmon, Scott, and Shasta, as impaired back in 1992, which, by the way, just happens to be the very same year that Agenda 21 was unveiled. Agenda 21, the United Nations Agenda for the 21st Century, unveiled in 1992 in Rio. I'm going to leave that article there, but see, the point is, water is very important. The control of water, the management of water. You can't do anything without water. You can't do anything without food. You can't do anything without energy. As they paid $2.79 a gallon for gas today. Is there an energy shortage? Not according to Lindsay Williams, who was there and saw that the federal government kept people, kept the oil companies from developing the resources that were there. Is there a shortage of water today? We're being told there is. When the air you breathe is filled with water, and cloud seeding technology is a reality, and yet they say there's a shortage of water. Here we see from February 8, 2003, German giant taking over American water supply. What's the reason for this, ladies and gentlemen? What's the reason for the World Trade Organization? What's the reason for the bankrupting of our country? Why are we letting foreign interests take over our corporations? Are we conspiracy nuts, or are we being taken over? That's the question. That's the question you can pose to your friends as you evangelize the truth to them. Dateline Monterey, California. This is from the Associated Press. It says, the influence of foreign business can be seen across America, with consumers cheerfully buying Japanese cars, Korean TVs, and clothing made in China. But many Americans aren't so happy about foreigners controlling their water supply. A recently completed $8.6 billion takeover of American Water Works by German-based industrial giant RWE has led to a backlash from a handful of cities across America. The deal covers more than 800 water systems serving 15 million people in 27 states and three Canadian provinces. Quote, as soon as people find out their water service is being bought by a German company, they are up in arms about it. That's why we got to make sure they don't find out. My comment, not hers. That was Juliette Beck, a senior organizer for Public Citizen, a Ralph Nader-backed group that has been rallying resistance to the RWE takeover, and here you have the Hegelian dialectic. Ralph Nader. Who is Ralph Nader? A communist? Certainly seems to fit the bill in my mind. But yet you have Ralph Nader's group fighting this stuff. And who's behind it all but the closet communists who control public policy of this country? The misgivings are driving community efforts to buy out RWE and regain control of local water systems in two Northern California communities, Montura and Felton, in Peoria and Pennkins, Illinois, and in Lexington, Kentucky. Charleston, West Virginia, is considering a bid for its water system, while the Southern California city of Thousand Oaks is trying a different tactic, urging state regulators to reverse their previous approval of RWE's takeover. Much of the opposition to RWE, the deal, has been orchestrated by Public Citizen, a critic of corporations inside and outside of America. The objections have ranged from concerns about whether the foreign-owned conglomerate will weaken U.S. environmental practices to worries that RWE's enormous debt load will lead to higher water bills. Few issues are as pricky as RWE's German heritage. Quote, that really bothered a lot of people, especially older folks, unquote, said Catherine Slater Carter, a Monterey resident since 1979. She says memories of World War II are still very strong. Officials from American Water and the water industry say the backlash against RWE is misguided. public citizen is doing a pretty good job of fanning the flames and playing on people's xenophobia, according to Tom Thorin, a spokesman. Supporters of the takeover say RWE's financial clout and expertise will help pay for much-needed improvement in local water systems and provide better protections against possible terrorist attacks on water supplies. Ah, yes. Once again, the Hegelian dialectic. We're going to have foreign interest. Now, you think about that statement for a moment. The solution to having the threat of terrorism on domestic water supplies is having foreign interests own them? What a load of nonsense. RWE isn't the only foreigner buying into the U.S. water industry, they say. French companies Vivendi Environment and Suez also have bought local water systems within the past few years. Vivendi entered the U.S. market in 1999 with a $7.9 billion takeover of U.S. Filter. The French company provides water and wastewater service to 110 million people in 100 countries, generating about $12 billion in annual revenue from the division. Besides running the Culligan bottled water service, U.S. Filter of Palm Desert, California, delivers water to about 13 million people in 600 communities. Suez, which collects about $8.5 billion in water revenue from 110 million people in 130 countries, entered the U.S. in 2000 with a $1 billion purchase of United Water Resources, based in Harrington Park, New Jersey, and a provider of water service to about 12.5 million people. Folks, did you have any idea that your water supply was literally owned by foreign interests? I don't see this talked about on the news very much. Do you, if at all? I haven't seen it talked about at all on the news. This is a part of globalization. This is what we call leveling the playing field. This is what we call selling out. The selling out of our country. That's what's going on here. Before coming to America, RWE expanded beyond its primary business as a power utility by buying England's Thames Water for $9.8 billion in 2000. The money provided by RWE and other foreign companies, will pay to replace aging pipes and strengthen security, the kind of improvements many cash-strapped communities can't afford. And why is that? Why are so many communities today cash-strapped, ladies and gentlemen? Could it be because we have a private monetary system, a debt note system, controlled by private bankers called the Federal Reserve Bank? Could that be why we have an almost $8 trillion national debt in this country? Very few people understand the monetary system. And yet it goes forward, as inflation goes forward, as communities are strapped for cash and are forced to receive federal dollars. States are strapped for cash and are forced to receive federal dollars. The federal government uses the carrot and stick approach with the states and force them to implement things from the United Nations system that wouldn't get done otherwise, because they need money so desperately. The money provided by RWE and other foreign companies will pay to replace aging pipes and strengthen security, the kind of improvements many cash-strapped communities can't afford, said Peter Cook, executive director for the National Association of Water Companies, a trade group. Thames will oversee RWE's newly acquired U.S. water systems, and has invested $6 billion in service improvements, mostly in Britain, since 1998. The opposition to RWE's U.S. expansion is so much hokum and jingoism, Cook said. Foreign ownership can bring many benefits to a community. We have foreign companies, ladies and gentlemen, that are going to be working on and building revamping our highway system. The International Trade Corridor, as the transportation bill has just passed. this massive, what is it, $286 billion transportation system to implement the Wildlands Project, as well as the International Trade Corridor, which go hand in hand. Critics fear RWE and Thames mostly will bring trouble. Thames, for instance, has been fined repeatedly in England for environmental violations that included allowing raw sewage to flow into the streets and onto people's lawns. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. I'm going to leave that there. I should post this on the website. I believe this is Detroit News is what this is from. We are almost up to break time already, as this half hour flies by. I want to get into some more information here about water, but first we see invasive species is junk science. This is from the Magic City Morning Star. Julie K. Smithson writes an editorial, "Invasive species is junk science." She says she can prove it. Now, what is invasive species? This is what the UNers commonly refer to as species that are invading and causing environmental destruction. Who causes invasive species? Where do they come from? She says invasive species can be almost any plant or animal deemed native or non-native that invades a place it is not welcome. See, and once again, I will make the argument, and this is my statement, not hers, as I've not read this entire piece, but wildlife has been wandering since the beginning of time. We've had plants and weeds and various things, various plant species that have been growing in different places since the beginning of time. Now, what has changed that man thinks that he has to come in and manage all of what nature does? That's the question. Why do we need to go in and manage these invasive species? These things are God-made. But see, these people are playing God. They believe they are God. She says, invasive species can be almost any plant or animal deemed native or non-native that invades a place it is not welcome. The newly sprouting layer of bureaucracy, regulation, and government graft stems not from a desire to curb invasives, but from what is seen as a golden opportunity to tap into many more taxpayer dollars while further regulating taxpayers and draining property rights. And keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, these people don't really need your dollars to get what they need to get done or what they want to get done. They print money out of nothing. The idea is to steal from you your labor so you have nothing. Because you can't resist if you don't have the wherewithal to do so. She says, how can this be, you ask? The media is screaming about invasive species from every corner, as though it were a foreign army landing upon our shores. It isn't. There are already in place regulations and statutes governing the use of noxious weeds and other undesirables. All that need to be done is to enforce those laws and revisit species in different areas as they wear out their welcomes or cross the line from ornamental to obnoxious. We got to take a break here. We'll continue this on the other side of the break. Invasive species, just another one of the environmental movements, both in and out of government, one of their tools at manipulating you, the people. We'll be back here in a moment on American Exposé. Let me know what the sound quality is like, ladies and gentlemen. 559-781-3773 is the number. We'll be back in a moment.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, It has been borrowed. It has been purchased. It has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on firstamendmentradio.com and WBCQ Shortwave at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at firstamendmentradio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at firstamendmentradio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on firstamendmentradio.com are listener-supported. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at firstamendmentradio.com.
AmericanExpose.com. American spelled with a K, not a C, or stop, agenda21.com. Very important that you get up to speed very quickly about what's going on in this country and do what you can to preserve what we have now and reclaim that which is being taken away. We continue on here with this invasive species is junk science. Now, the author writes, invasive species can be almost any plant or animal deemed native or non-native that invades a place it is not welcome. The newly sprouting layer of bureaucracy, regulation, and government graft stems not from the desire to curb invasives, quote-unquote, but from what is seen as a golden opportunity to tap into many more taxpayer dollars while further regulating taxpayers and draining property rights. How can this be, you ask? Well, the media is screaming about invasive species from every corner, as though it were a foreign army landing upon our shores, and of course it isn't. There are already in place regulations and statutes governing the use of noxious weeds and other undesirables. All that need be done is to enforce those laws and revisit species in different areas as they wear out their welcomes or cross the line from ornamental to obnoxious. Some species of flora and fauna are welcome in one area and dreaded in another. That is no excuse to forbid them all. Congress recently struck all invasive species language from the transportation bill, SAFE-TEA. Why? One onerous wording could have made all highway projects fair game for those seeking to stop them by merely claiming invasive species were present. And, of course, the environment isn't really the concern, as violations of the environment can go on any time they put into place a project which needs to get done in order to implement the agenda against you and I. They can pollute the environment as much as they want. A good example of that is MTBE that they put in gasoline. It was a massive, massive environmental disaster. Learning about the junk science embodied by the invasive species frenzy saved America from another layer of an unnecessary and duplicitous regulatory imprisonment. Sound familiar? This is the big brother to endangered species, that 30-something year mess that has gutted logging, ranching, commercial fishing, etc. in America and made private property rights little more than a doormat for litigation-happy environmental groups who say they're protecting or saving this or that poster species. Many species dubbed endangered actually aren't. And that's the point. That's the point that I've been trying to make all along. Ladies and gentlemen, whenever I say that since the Endangered Species Act was passed, we've never had more endangered species. Many species dubbed endangered actually aren't, but are simply used to further something increasingly recognized as a rush to acquire vast areas of land and control of water. Those most incensed about protecting, quote-unquote, and restoring, quote-unquote, habitat, quote-unquote, those incensed about protecting, restoring habitat wax utterly silent when massive conflagrations burn our mismanaged, stagnating forests by the millions of acres, which also incinerate endangered flora and fauna. Where is the hue and cry when countless smoky bears lose their lives in the face of these fires? Such protection, quote-unquote, of habitat is something that most plants and animals certainly don't need. In fact, these out-of-control wildfires actually endanger much more than they help. Junk science strikes again. She says, I make no claim to be an expert on invasive species or science, but my daily research has for years provided knowledge that something's wrong with the best available science being used to strip property rights from honest citizens. When best available bears the aroma of last week's fish wrapper, junk science has likely been used. Perhaps the real invasive species are those driving such agendas to create more wealth and power. Please consider. Again, Julie K. Smithson from London, Ohio. And you can visit the Property Rights Research website at propertyrightsresearch.org. And her email address, if you want to email her, is propertyrights@earthlink.net. But this piece appeared in the Magic City Morning Star, as well as other publications as well. Moving along here, as there's other things going on. Here we see from the Pravda news agency, which is from Russia, which, by the way, happened to be the same news organization that reported that Saddam Hussein was not the real Saddam Hussein, according to his wife. I believe that was Pravda. But here we see Bush acknowledges the collapsing U.S. economy. This is an article that Dennis posted on the website, and it's on the website right now if you would like to read it. The U.S. administration aims to spend $286 billion on the development of the American transport system. It says U.S. President George W. Bush released a remarkable statement a short time ago. The remark has not been highlighted in the world media yet, although there is every reason to do so. Bush virtually acknowledged that the USA was experiencing a serious economic crisis. Moreover, the U.S. government was taking immense efforts to avoid a massive outbreak of social uneasiness, the American president believes. Isn't that remarkable? listening to our media here, folks, you'd believe that everything was fine. The economy's making a rebound. Everything's great. We just have this problem of high gas prices, but hey. One may come to the conclusion from the newly signed law, they continue, about the development of the U.S. transport system. The implementation of the law will cost taxpayers too much money. The U.S. government plans to spend $286 billion on the implementation of the law during the forthcoming 6 years. Furthermore, Bush had to cut the cost of the law, which originally made up $400 billion. $400 billion. The U.S. Treasury, however, will have to spend only $12.3 billion during 10 years to guarantee the energy security and independence within the scope of the recently passed energy policy law. NASA's annual budget makes up $16 billion. Therefore, the sum of $400 billion makes a huge sum of money, even from the point of view of American financial standards. Passing such highly expensive laws is usually accompanied with heated debate, numerous changes, and so on and so forth. This time, however, a bill was transformed into a law a lot earlier than usual. As it was supposed, $24 billion was supposed to be used for governmental subsidies to the states. Once again, you have the carrot and stick that I mentioned earlier. $24 billion were supposed to be used for governmental subsidies to the states, which will be fulfilling the projects of the law. What projects are these, folks? Part of this is calf to pork. Part of this is arm-twisting the lawmakers. We'll give you this amount of money for this project, this pet project. You can go back to your constituency and say you got this done. You got this money from the federal government. If you'll just vote for CAFTA, you'll just vote for the demise of this country. You traitors in Congress, allowing yourselves to be manipulated and intimidated while the country burns. Adversaries of the law said the congressmen and senators would most likely spend the money inappropriately, trying to insulate their electorate. In addition, many protest against the unwillingness of the U.S. Congress to control the state spending at the moment, when the budgetary shortage is to exceed the record-breaking $333 during the current year. The law envisages 6,300 special projects. Once again, 6,300 special projects in all states. Now, here's some of the special projects: bridges, highways, landscape accomplishment, snowmobile tracks, etc. As I covered on Friday's broadcast, if you were listening, you heard, we have in place right now, being built right now in different places, bridges for wildlife. That's right. The U.S. federal government, as a part of this highway bill that Pravda is talking about here, the United States government is currently studying what causes roadkill. I'm not making this up, folks. It's on Friday's broadcast. It'll be in the archives eventually if you missed it. But the United States government is currently studying what causes roadkill. And they're looking at ways to prevent roadkill. And a part of that is wildlife bridges. 6,300 special projects in all states. Bridges, highways, landscape accomplishment, snowmobile tracks, etc. Is it also bad with the U.S. infrastructure, they ask? And once again, you have some common sense slipping in to the foreign media. Is it all so bad with the U.S. infrastructure? See, what's the purpose of doing this? That's the point. We have a system that has served us fine for years. Why revamp it? Well, the purpose is globalization, ladies and gentlemen. That's what it's all about. We're going global, baby. And yet the American people think we're conspiracy kooks when we talk about a new world order. What is wrong with these people? We are so dumbed down, mind-controlled, and manipulated in this country that we're not going to have a clue that anything is going wrong until it's already a done deal. They continue by saying George W. Bush released a key statement which dotted all I's at this point. The law is meant to generate more jobs and give an incentive to the economic development of the USA. They say the triumphant leader of the world's strongest superpower, and are we really, ladies and gentlemen, are we really the world's strongest superpower? I think we're pretty weak at this point. And that's the point. If we had people in power, as I often say, that mean for this country to be well, to do well, to excel, then we would have the military in this country patrolling the borders right now. We would have military bases not being closed down, but being occupied by our own troops, rather than by China Ocean Shipping Company crate containers. What's the purpose of that? The triumphant leader of the world's strongest superpower would never utter such words. The above-mentioned statements from the American president do not characterize the USA as a great empire. Did you hear that? The above-mentioned statements from the American president do not characterize the USA as a great empire. Quite on the contrary, they say. The White House is desperately looking for measures to find employment for crowds of unemployed American citizens and hungry migrants, which threaten to enrage the rest of the states. There were 9.3 million unemployed American citizens registered in the USA in 2004. Pravda says. The foreign trade shortage of the USA made up $617.73 billion in 2004, which became the record-breaking index for the USA. To crown it all, the U.S. state debt reached an unimaginable $7.22 trillion in 2004 as well. All optimistic reports about the rising U.S. economy carry this short-term efficiency only, they are presumably destined to save the devising U.S. dollar. Quarterly changes in the number of the unemployed by 100 to 200,000 people do not change the general situation. The USA has already faced such hard periods in its history. Taking a look back at the previous experience of the USA and estimating the new initiative of the American government, one may thus infer that the law about the transport system is like the last glimmer of hope for the U.S. administration to keep the nation under control. When massive unemployment put the USA on the brink of survival during the Great Depression of the 30s, the government started funding the development of the transport infrastructure. It became the only way out of the crisis. Highways on which the government spent billions and billions of dollars rescued the entire nation. Folks, it won't happen this time because we have private companies, multinational corporations, and foreign interests coming in and building our highways. And that's the point. You're probably also going to have a lot of migrants getting jobs, building our highway system. We're going to be paying tolls. We're going to be paying tolls to use the roads. These are going to be toll roads. So we're going to be paying foreign interests to use our highways, even as we pay foreign interests every time we turn on the water faucet. And Americans believe we still live in the land of the free. What nonsense. I'm sorry that we have this bad news. I'm sorry that we have a crisis that we have in this country right now. My heart bleeds for this country every single day. But until we have enough people wake up and realize what's going on here, our lives, our futures, and the future of our posterity will be that of a sustainable, quote-unquote, future. Pravda continues. They say it is worth mentioning that the value of the U.S. dollar used to be lower during that time. Here is another example which bears some similarity to the present-day USA. When Adolf Hitler came to power in 1933, Germany was suffering from massive unemployment and a helpless economy. Hitler mobilized thousands of the unemployed to build autobahns, which Germany is proud of still. The road construction gave a powerful impetus to the revival of the German industry. huge state investments triggered the industrial development, and Germany turned into one of the strongest European superpowers. The White House is going along with the same path now, they say. However, there is a certain aspect which distinguishes the USA from the above-mentioned examples. Both Hitler's Germany and the USA of the Great Depression period were raising their economies up from the bottom. Nowadays, the USA enjoys the peak of its triumphant development, which is currently being damaged with the flaws of the American economic system. The USA obviously has something to lose. This, ladies and gentlemen, is how we're being viewed by the foreign media. Why is it we can see it? We can't see it when they can. Why is it that our media is not telling us the truth? Most of you know the answer to that, but I say this for those who are not familiar with this information, who are new to the broadcast. It's time for every American to wake up and smell the coffee and to do your research and spread the information while we still have a country. Because every American needs to get active at the local level, because that's where all of this is being implemented ultimately. And I'm talking about Agenda 21, the Wildlands Project, so many things. They mentioned in that piece about keeping the nation under control. They say the U.S. has already faced such hard periods in its history, taking a look back at the previous experience of the USA and estimating the new initiative of the American government. One may thus infer that the law about the transport system is like the last glimmer of hope for the U.S. administration to keep the nation under control. Speaking of keeping the nation under control, we see from the World Socialist website, and this is also is posted by Dennis on AmericanExpose.com, spelled with a K. Pentagon devising scenarios for martial law in U.S. We're talking about keeping America under control. It says, according to a report published Monday by the Washington Post, the Pentagon has developed its first ever war plans for operations within the continental United States in which terrorist attacks would be used as the justification for imposing martial law on cities, regions, or the entire country. Couldn't have spoke it better myself. The front page article cites sources working at the headquarters of the military's Northern Command, or NORTHCOM, located in Colorado Springs, Colorado. The plans themselves are classified, but, quote, officers who drafted the plans, unquote, gave details to Post reporters Bradley Graham, who was recently given a tour of NORTHCOM headquarters at Peterson Air Force Base. The article thus appears to be a deliberate leak conducted for the purpose of accustoming the American population to the prospect of military rule. Keep in mind, William Cohen said, 4 years before September 11, 2001, that they were doing a four-year plan to review the military. They were getting the military ready. And he was warning in an article in the Army Times, and we have that article posted at 911.sweetliberty.org, then Secretary of Defense William Cohen said that terrorism is escalating to the point where Americans will soon have to choose between civil liberties and more intrusive means of protection. Once again, that article is at 911.sweetliberty.org, the war section of Sweet Liberty, 911.sweetliberty.org. They continue here. They say, according to Graham, quote, the new plans provide for what several senior officers acknowledged is the likelihood that the military will have to take charge in some situations, especially when dealing with mass casualty attacks that could quickly overwhelm civilian resources, unquote. The question is, folks, what's being planned for us? We know the real terrorists are those who point the finger and accuse everyone else of being terrorists. But the World Socialist site continues by saying the Post account declares, quote, the war plans represent a historic shift for the Pentagon, which has been reluctant to become involved in domestic operations and is legally constrained from engaging in law enforcement, unquote. And of course, I'm certain they're talking about Posse Comitatus laws. However, as that article that I mentioned earlier from William Cohen from the Army Times. Those laws with the traitorous Congress that we have in place could be very easily changed. A total of 15 potential crisis scenarios are outlined, ranging from low-end, which Graham described as relatively modest crowd control missions, to high-end, after as many as 3 simultaneous catastrophic mass casualty events, such as nuclear, biological, or chemical weapons attacks. In each case, the military would deploy a quick reaction force of as many as 3,000 troops per attack, 9,000 total in the worst-case scenario. More troops could be made available as needed. Are these going to be foreign troops? Are these going to be U.S. troops? What's the reason? Why do we have our military out of this country? That's the question you need to keep asking as you consider these scenarios. Do we have the Chinese military already in this country? Are there going to be U.N. troops patrolling American streets? The Post quotes a statement by Admiral Timothy J. Keating, head of NORTHCOM. Quote, he says, in my estimation, in the event of a biological, a chemical, or a nuclear attack in any of the 50 states, the Department of Defense is best positioned of the various 8 federal agencies that would be involved to take that lead. Unquote. The newspaper describes an unresolved debate among the military planners on how to integrate the new domestic mission with ongoing U.S. deployments in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other foreign conflicts. One major document of over 1,000 pages designed CON Plan 2002 provides a general overview of air, sea, and land operations in both a post-attack situation and for prevention and deterrence actions aimed at intercepting threats before they reach the United States. Unquote. A second document, CON Plan 0500, details the 15 scenarios and the actions associated with them. The Post reports, quote, CON Plan 2002 has passed a review by the Pentagon's Joint Staff, and is due to go soon to the Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and top aides for further study and approval, the officer said. CON Plan 0500 is still undergoing final drafting at NORTHCOM headquarters, they say. While NORTHCOM was established only in October 2002, its headquarters staff of 640 is already larger than that of Southern Command, which oversees U.S. military operations throughout Latin America and the Caribbean. There's much, much more to this piece. Go to AmericanExpose.com and read it. Tell your friends about it. From the World Socialist website, who I guess is against this thing, supposedly, as you have the Hegelian dialectic at work all throughout our lives. Thanks for being with us, ladies and gentlemen. Do your research, pray for this republic, and do what you can to restore it, because time is very, very short. God bless you, folks, and good night.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War and the Right of Succession.